Welcome to Who What Wear with Hillary Kerr, your direct line to the designers, stylists, beauty experts, editors, and tastemakers who are shaping the ever-evolving world of fashion. I'm your host, Hillary Kerr, and today I'm handing things over to another member of our Who What Wear team, Senior Beauty Editor Erin Johns. Erin is speaking with our April cover star, the singer, songwriter, and actress, Andra Day. Andra's soulful music has stirred our emotions since her debut album in 2015, but in her recent role, the Golden Globe-winning, Oscar-nominated portrayal of Billie Holiday, Andra is showing the world a new side of her creativity. Andra tells Erin about entering a profound new phase of her career, her personal connection to Billie Holiday's story, and the beauty and fashion influences throughout history that she draws upon for her personal style. It's all coming up on Who What Wear.
Andra, first of all, how was the shoot last Friday?
It was amazing, actually. I was just looking back at some like pictures from the shoot and some behind the scenes, and I was like, oh my God, I love the looks that they put together. And it was fun. The photographer is incredible. The energy was right. You know?
Good. I'm so glad to hear it. So I'll just dive in. First of all, I want to say congratulations on your Golden Globes win.
Thank you so much.
Did you ever think you'd be getting recognized for acting in addition to singing?
No. No, I did not think that at all, especially because I didn't even want to do this movie. So
right. I've read that. And we'll be diving a little bit into that a little later. But I'd love to just kind of take it back. How musical was your upbringing? Did you always know that you wanted to be a singer?
Yeah, I always knew I wanted to do the arts. I wanted to perform or create. It's always just been a part of my life. Music was always in our house. And I went to a performing arts school when I was very young, which was how I was introduced to Billie Holiday when I was 11. Apparently, my grandfather on my mother's side was a jazz musician and singer, which I didn't know because I didn't know him. But so it's always been a part of my life. And yeah, I've always loved it. I think I always knew this is what I wanted to do in some form or fashion. For me, it was just, do I want to do Broadway or do I want to record or, you know, do recorded music? So
right. Well, and I also, correct me if I'm wrong, but I heard that you were kind of discovered by Stevie Wonder's wife at the time at a mall, which also feels like a very surreal kind of crazy thing.
I was singing in a strip mall in Malibu in front of this shoe store. And so the guy that I was working with at the time, you know, just recorded me singing and then found himself in a pastry shop with Kai Miller Morris, who is just my godmom. I love her. And she heard the clip of me singing and she loved it. And that's when she divulged that she was Stevie's wife. He liked the sound of my voice as well, too. And so they reached out and they set up a call, and it was just crazy being on the phone talking about music with Stevie Wonder. And it ultimately worked out, but it didn't work out that time because of not a great partnership with who I was working with at the time. God bless him. But they held on to my information. And then ultimately, they ended up introducing me to the producer that did my first record, Cheers to the Fall. So yeah, it's a long, everything in my life is long form.
Well, and I know that you recently portrayed Billie Holiday and then also in your music video for Tigress and Tweed, Angela Davis. And I do feel like you are such a modern day storyteller with your music. Is there anyone else that you want to portray through your work?
Yeah, I think just anybody who grabs me. I mean, I love Angela, right? Of course, I would, you know, I think just fierce, strong Black women, and not just fierce, strong fighting, and, you know, but we're fierce and strong in so many different ways. You know, I think I was telling someone the other day that I think it's interesting when people think femininity is very delicate and soft, and I'm like, it's super strong, you know what I mean? So there's layers to us, and we're all different. So, yeah, I mean, if I do this again, I definitely want it to be an interesting story and a character that has layers. And oftentimes I like to see us in spaces where we've not been traditionally represented or we've been sort of shut out of, you know.
Completely.
So, you know, but I want to tell stories. I'm developing something right now and I just praying about it because hopefully I don't suck at this. But I started researching and writing and this story that has been really close to my heart for a long time, and the woman's been close to my heart for a long time. So I'm looking forward to getting into that space of popping the lid off of suppressed narratives and getting them into the forefront, you know?
Definitely. Yeah, and talking about other women, I know that people do like to compare you, you know, to other. I've mm-hmm. heard Eartha Kitt, Adele, Amy Winehouse. Mm-hmm. Do you take that as a compliment, or do you kind of just wish people would stop comparing you to other people?
You know, it's so funny, right? I know I'm aware that that is a thing, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? For artists, it is a sensitive thing because, listen, and also as women, oh my God, people try to group us together all the time. Oh, you're like this. Or you're, it's like they can't right. understand you outside of another person. But to be honest with you, I don't care, you know? I'm like, right. it doesn't stop me from doing my shit, you know, doing what it is that I do. So yeah, it probably was a time where it bothered me. It just doesn't, I don't know. I don't care.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I love all of those women, you know. The only time it bothers me is when you can tell someone's intention is to be insulting, which I just don't understand. I'm like, okay, right. cool. But even then, I'm like, all right, if this is what you decided to do with your time when you got off of work, that sucks, but okay, cool. You know, yeah, like, definitely. I don't know. It really doesn't bother me. I like all of them. So shit, I think it's a compliment, you know.
It's a good group. Good
yeah,
company.
I know. I'm like, cool.
Well, and like you were saying, I think music seems to have just ability to make people listen and to, I think people can more easily absorb history and experience and lost stories, like exactly yeah. what you're saying. What do you want to say through your music in like this time that we're currently living in, where I think people, their ears are perked, they're more mm-hmm. aware, they're trying to be more aware?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first, beyond anything, I'm a deeply spiritual person. So I actually really want people to encounter God. I want people to encounter Christ through me in a real way that I've encountered. Because there's a lot of loud voices in this space right now that are filling the space. I don't understand, sowing seeds of division, right? And sowing mm-hmm. seeds of making people feel unworthy for their lives or who they are. And this is not how I've encountered God. And so that's first and foremost for me always. Secondly, you know, truth, you know what I mean? I think that when it comes to equality, right? Equality among the races, among the genders, among, you know, these are systems of inequality have to be built on deception. They have to be mm-hmm. built on lies. You have to control the narrative, you know what I mean? And manipulate things if you're going to allow a system like this to persist and to grow. So truth, you know, I think the only thing that can dismantle a system of deception, obviously, is a healthy dose of truth. And that's what I want her story to do, because she was truly the godmother of civil rights. And it's a tragedy that we never knew that about her until now. But that was intentional. And I think that's what people need to understand, the intentionality of inequality, you know what I mean?
Right.
And so it's not just oopsie daisy, it happened like this. You know, this is something that's been built up. So we didn't do it to ourselves. So it's not just on us to break it down. But I think continuing to tell the truth of these stories is a huge, huge part of dismantling that.
Definitely. And I also read a few other interviews, and it sounds like learning that this was the story that you were going to tell helped you decide to want to take on the role, versus she'd obviously been portrayed by other people and other
yeah.
projects. So I would love if you could walk me through the process of what changed your mind. I know Lee Daniels wasn't initially on board really either, and I would love to just hear what brought yeah. you guys together and how you kind of got through any times of self-doubt or fear approaching this project.
So many. Yeah. Yes, that's why I agreed to audition. You know what I mean? Not why I necessarily agreed to do the role. I think I was still like, I'll go through the audition, but I'm going to be terrible. Right. And even if they want me, I'm going to say no, because I don't understand it and it's confusing. Mm-hmm. We were sort of forced on each other by our managers. My manager was like, you know, there's this Billie Holiday script. And I was like, bruh, hell no, we're not doing this. This is not the look. This is not the move. And Lee's people, his manager, kept hitting him up, his agents, you got to work with Andrew, which is so funny to me. I'm like, why? Like, when he tells me the story, it's crazy to me. I'm like, why were they so adamant about me? I have, you know, mm-hmm. it's not like they're like, she's got this great acting experience. You know what I mean? I just love Billie Holiday. That's it, you know? Uh-huh. So I don't know. I think it's one of those ordained things. God is great, you know? So we had this meeting. We finally had this initial meeting. We met actually at the Soho House. And we were both sitting there looking at each other like, why the hell are we here? This is so weird. But we just started talking. And I found out through him and through reading the script, you know, that they had sent over, that the other part that I forgot to mention was that I didn't want to remake Lady Sings the Blues. Diana's performance in that shit is just like, it's primal. You know what I mean? It's so real. Mm-hmm. It's untouchable. Like, why?
Right.
But as a fan of Billie's, I also knew it wasn't the full picture of the government going after her, the full picture of who Billie was as a fighter, as a civil rights leader. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so when I found out that it would be focused on the war on drugs, on the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, Harry J. Anslinger and J. Edgar Hoover's relentless pursuit of her, McCarthy as well, you know, And they created the War on Drugs really to target her, to get her to stop singing Strange Fruit, which is a song about lynching in America.
Right.
When I found out that they would be vindicating her legacy as a fan of hers, that was extremely enticing for me. And so that made me audition. And then it was like Lee's need to tell the truth, to show a layered, beautiful woman and all of her triumphs and all of her, you know, I don't even want to say failures, but all her experiences, that and along with prayer and being caused to do an act of great faith really carried me through the audition and into saying yes and agreeing to do the part.
Yeah. And then what's the process like after filming a role like that? Because I know that you went to physical, emotional lengths, cutting your hair, losing weight, spending time with drug addicts to like really authentically interpret her in that role. Like, how do you kind of unstick from kind of becoming another human being and someone that has that type of legacy that she does?
I don't know. When I figure it out, I will tell you. No. I have to tell you, you know, for me, I don't know how other people do it, so I can't speak for them. But I know prayer has been a huge, huge part of trying to find a place of balance again and identifying who I am and who I'm supposed to be in this season. You know what I mean? So there's aspects of her that will never go away. Mm-hmm. And in a large part, I didn't want it to because I stopped liking. I didn't like who I was. I didn't know who I was, honestly. I've been her for 3 years. And so it's like this idea of, okay, now be you. Like I couldn't function in it because I didn't know how my body felt like that. I was very familiar with her, you know. And to be honest with you, after we do all of this press and promo stuff, I think therapy is not a scary word for me. I think it needs to be undone as a scary word in our community. But I am. I'm going to go talk to somebody and just make sure everything is copacetic, you know what I mean, up here. So yeah, you know, it's just like she took everything, so it's like
Well, and I'm sure to a certain degree it's the same thing kind of happens just when you're Andra and, you know, you have your performances and your red carpets, and then you have to figure out how to unwind and feel just like a normal human being.
Absolutely.
How do you do that even before this project?
Even before, again, like I said, prayer is a huge one for me. If I have a spiritual grounding, you know what I mean? You know, if all of this goes away, I'll be more than okay. I'll still be blessed. You know what I'm saying? Even though I love it and it is a gift and it fuels me and everything, I realize that my relationship with God and the family that he's blessed me with, it will come first. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It does come first. And so I think that grounding is sort of what helps me navigate not the creative, artistic, musical side, but all of the wave of the busyness and the moving and the shaking and the industry of it all. You know what I mean?
Definitely. And I mean, you had a huge fan base before the role, and I'm sure you have even more people listening and following you now. Like you said, there's so many layers. Like, you're a singer, you're an activist. What do you want people to know that separates you from the roles that they might see you in, or even you just as like a celebrity, about you?
Well, I mean, even the titles, the ascribed titles, right? Activists, I ain't give myself that. You know what I mean? It's just like Billie. It wasn't like she was like, I'm an activist and I'm going to go do activism and activist things and be very active, you know? It was just like, yo, stop lynching people. You know what I mean? It just is sort of like, bro, it's wrong. Like this just wanting to help people and wanting to serve. It's more so than anything, I'm a servant. That's what it is. I'm a servant. And that's the best way I can describe it. I always think about this scripture that talks about regard one another as higher than yourselves. And so I have in my mind this beautiful picture of eternity, just regarding each other as higher than ourselves, and everybody is loved and valued and taken care of. So yeah, I don't know. It's not activism. I'm just a servant. I want to help people, you know?
I want to kind of rewind a little bit back to talking about you not initially wanting this role. But since it was such a success, and you obviously just have blown away everybody and touched so many people.
Thank you.
Do you feel inspired now to take on new territory, new challenges that you just never even thought you'd ever be interested in?
That's funny that you say that, too, because I think what it does is it encourages me, because I never acted before this, you know what I mean? Except for like doing musical theater when I was in middle school and high school, you know, like very different. And the other day there's a story that we're developing now that I'm working on now and doing the research for, and just started writing, and I'm going to get with some great co-writers and great co-producers and directors. And I really want to bring this story to life. And it was funny because I was talking to to a woman who's just a beautiful woman and thinking like, okay, she's trusting me with this story and I feel like a fraud. You know, how am I going to do this? I told her, I was like, I'm out of my depth. Like, I don't really know. But then I feel encouraged. I feel like what God did with the movie and with the performance and the collaborators that he put around me, that he blessed me with, you know, my co-stars and Lee and Susan Laurie Parks, Tasha Smith, Tom Jones, Johan Hari. And so as soon as I started to feel that fear again, like, oh no, why am I doing this? You know, I was just reminded in that moment, like, you didn't know what you were doing and you were this scared before you did Billie Holiday. You know what I mean? But just right. Like, I could just kind of feel the spirit impressing upon me to just trust God and just say, okay, cool. Whoever's supposed to be here will be here. And whoever's supposed to be a part of telling this story will be here. And we will honor, her and her family. We'll honor the youth with this story. So yeah, I guess I'm emboldened, but then that fear seizes me up and I just have to remind myself that, like, all right, cool, it worked last time. Let's just keep believing in that, you know?
I feel like that's such a pattern too. You know, the anticipation and worrying and self-doubt is the worst part and the scariest part, I think.
Yeah,
usually
for sure.
So many things in life.
I have, like, literally, I guess there's an official name for it now, which is imposter syndrome, you know?
Yes.
And I have, like, the biggest case of that. Even now, as we speak, every interview I go into and everybody's like, oh, you're so great. I'm just like, no, they don't really know that I'm not really that great, you know? I think it's something in particular that we as women deal with, and then to another degree, we as Black women deal with. And so it is something I'd like to see kind of, not the humility, I think that's a strength and a fuel, but that insecurity, that inadequacy, that unworthiness, that imposter syndrome, that's not. You know, I think that could, should be, I'd like to see that rooted out, you know.
I know you mentioned this project that you're currently working on, but do you have anything else exciting on the horizon? Like an album, well, any other exciting secrets?
Yes. The album is actually coming. Tigress and Tweed is the first single off the album, as well as the song for the movie. And then the new album comes June 4th, and the new singles for the album come next month, actually, in April. So I'm very, very, very excited. There's definitely some Billie DNA that made it onto the project, you know what I mean?
Definitely. That's funny that you say that, because I know that people are very caught up in making that comparison, and they have, like, Andra and Billie, like, it's this kind of big idea right now.
Yeah, I realized I have to kind of, like, remind some people, like, hey, I am actually not her. Even though it's a blessing, though. People are just moved by her story, I think, you know, and Lee did such a great job portraying a woman, you know, and just, like, multifaceted woman. And then the character of Jimmy Fletcher, played brilliantly by Trevante Rhodes, you know, Tyler Williams as Prez, and Miss Lawrence's debut, Divine, Tone. He put a wonderful story together with Rob and Natasha Garrett, you know. I love these people so much. It's just crazy, yeah.
I'm sure. Yeah, and it is so haunting because it feels like you brought this other time straight into 2021.
That's amazing. That's a blessing to hear that, because that was really, that was the goal. How do we bring Billie right now, especially to the youth? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And one of the things I always said, I'm like, just show them how gangster she was, honestly. You know what I mean? That's like, she was a layered, messy, but, like, also not messy. And just show them what she had to face, how progressive she was. I mean, this is a Black queer woman trying to live freely in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. You got to be gang for that. You know what I mean? So, and that was the goal with even Tigress and Tweed, the song, you know, was sort of, how do we bring her to right now? So it's a blessing to see young people be like, whoa, who was Billie Holiday? Why did I never know this about her?
Right. And inspires them to learn about other people. Because, like you said, there's so much to uncover. But you always have had this kind of old school jazzy blues kind of flair to both your singing, I feel like, and your style and fashion. How has music and history impacted your approach to beauty and fashion, would you say?
Yes, I'm hugely inspired. I've always been sort of a vintage girl, and I love the style. I love the music. I love the cinema, just the look, right, from back then. And so she actually is one of my biggest style icons, you know, and inspirations. So it's influenced because I think, you know, there's sort of this, like, rockabilly subculture, right, in California and Vegas and in America. And I never really saw us, like, Black women represented in that space, even though I always loved it. And I loved the Dorothy Dandridges and the Pearl Bailey, you know, and Billie Holiday. And so, I don't know, I love that time. I love that music. I mean, other than, like, being a Black woman in the 40s. Even though still I'm a Black woman in America now, you know what I mean? But I don't know. It just seemed like everything was done with so much more detail and so much more intention, and the structure and the craftsmanship of things back then, and just the drama of it all. You know, it was just so, 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 so beautiful. And so I do kind of live in that world in my head.
Well, and it's so apparent, like, you know, on red carpets and shoots, I've seen that you have a lot of fun with hair and makeup, and every look is so unique and vibrant and beautiful. Do you kind of bring aspects of that to every day, or is this something that you kind of save up for your performances or red carpets?
If I was going to get dressed up every day, then yes, it is. I either love just like natural, glowy, effervescent, or just like vintage vixen. You know what I mean? I'm always like the vintage vixen meets Disney evil villain. You know what I'm saying? Because I was like, princesses wasn't doing too much for me. But the reality is, sis, like in my regular life, no, I am so lazy when it comes to my look, and that sounds so bad. And I think that's why when we do this, but we have so much to do. You know, we're constantly dressing up for this thing or that thing or da-da-da, whatever. And even sometimes when we do these events, I'll still show up in just some sweats, you know what I mean, or a little basketball tee or whatever. But yes, if I were to dress up every day, that is exactly what the look would be. So when I do sometimes in my life dress up, that's the look that I love. But I'm like, oh my God, I'm usually not combing my hair. I probably haven't even shaved. I haven't shaved my armpits or my legs. I just stay clean and move.
Definitely. And I love that you pretty much always work with the same kind of glam team, right?
Yes. And I'm going to say them: Portia Cooper, Tony Medina, Jolene B on my nails, and Wari Vice is my stylist. That's my family. You know what I'm saying? And I've been with them forever. And that's why in this journey, it's been really important for me to have them with me, because, you know, I don't like this idea that it's like, oh, once you get to a new level, okay, now kind of drop all that. And I'm like, I want to try new things in this space, but I also want to bring my family with me, because they were with me when we had nothing. You know what I'm saying? And so
much respect for that.
I think family and loyalty is fashionable. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Do you have any favorite red carpet moments or looks that stick out to you?
I do. Actually, my first one is the Grammys from 18? I don't remember. I had the like big beehive, and the whole look I was going for was BAPS, you know, with Halle Berry, was BAPS and Ab Fab. That was the mix of those that era. Because I just love that era as well, too. And I love, like, you know, the nanny, like Fran Drescher, like how the 90s kind of did the 80s and the 80s did the 50s and 40s. So that was like the nanny, Ab Fab, BAPS. That was my inspiration for that Grammy look. And it was a Victoria Hayes custom dress. And then also a similar look and a similar dress for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I love that. It was a beehive, and it was very rock and roll, yellow and black blazer, like gown to the floor.
Okay.
With these high boots and this big beehive. And then the other was, I love wearing flowers in my hair because of Billie Holiday. But then I fell in love with like Valley of the Dolls and, you know, that type of look. Yeah. And so also, I think the Grammys 2017, I don't remember, but I had this cascaded like flowers in my hair, and it was a vintage Dior sort of peach dress. I loved the hair, and I loved everything about the look.
I love how much color you wear too.
Oh, thank you.
And then I know you kind of mentioned how most days you're pretty relaxed with your approach to beauty, but I would love to know any products you love, like any hair tricks, any skincare rituals, like all that
absolutely.
Good stuff.
Yeah, so that I love. Like I love skincare, I love hair care, I love, and actually even the makeup that I will do on a light day, I'm big about skincare, you know, and so even makeup that I do on a day is just a really light touches to just focus on the places of the face I want people to focus on. So I put my blush, for instance, is like a cream blush from Givenchy that they don't make anymore. Ooh. So I hope this interview makes them make it again. I was like, you guys, the bottle broke. I'm running low. I need another one. Thank you. But it's this like liquid blush. And I make sure to place it really high on my cheeks because it just brings all the attention up. Mm-hmm. And then there is this wonderful freaking Marc Jacobs highlighter that I love. They stopped making that too. So they started making it for Christmas again. So I bought like three of them. It's called Guilty, I guess, is what it's called. It's so gorgeous. Okay. And then everything Chanel lip and mascara as well, too. And I also use the Chanel brow pencil, if I'm just going to kind of fill in things a little bit. So, yeah, but skincare, I use this like Organic Clear face wash that I love. I am a daily exfoliator girl, like a gentle exfoliator. I do believe in that. And I love my La Mer products so much.
They're very nice.
They are so nice. I have to say. But I will say one of the other secrets that I use is this donkey's milk soap, which I know most people are like, who the hell wants to rub a donkey's ass on their face? But I read one time when I was reading about Cleopatra, because I just love reading about queens. And so I heard that she would bathe in donkey's milk. And that's why her skin was so soft and why she looked so young and did all stuff. Uh-huh. So I went and looked up, and it turns out that the fatty acid in donkey's milk is really, really great for your skin. And so I started using that. Sea buckthorn oil is another one as well. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, shea butter, coconut oil. You know what I mean? And actually, I have to shout out Stacey Merriman. She makes, oh my God, she makes these hair oils and these hair butters. My hair was like straight razored, so it was gone for the movie. Right. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So it's growing so much. She made me this special concoction of hair growth oils and hair growth butters. She was actually the stylist that did my hair. Charles Gregory and Stacey Merriman, she was the main stylist that did my hair on the movie set. But Stacey, for hair and skin. And skin, for those butters, skin, oh, you want it. You want it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you said, too, it's like your makeup's only going to look as good as your skin looks, too. So I think that's something that people sometimes forget is like
100%.
Skin has to be on point.
Yeah, that's one of the things I tell people, too. I'm like, you actually don't need primers or a lot of primer if you actually have a good base. Because I think what I learned is like, because I have more kind of, I guess, normal to oily type of skin. Mm-hmm. And I think the first thing people with oily skin want to do is strip it as dry as they possibly can and mat it out as much. But the opposite is what you should do, which is put moisture into it, because your skin freaks out and will produce more oil when it feels like it's too dry. So that was one thing that I learned. And when I started doing that, I mean, makeup just laid on my face better and my skin looked better. So yes, moisturize, please moisturize. Don't run from it.
What do you do for exfoliation? Because I think that's something that people hear that they're supposed to do, and then they do too much of it. And like you're saying, they're not moisturizing, and all of a sudden they're like breaking out and all this crazy stuff starts happening to their skin.
Yeah, absolutely. I have like a saffron face oil scrub, and then I also have this, it's a La Mer mask. It's the regenerating scrub. Mm-hmm. But I think any type of like, whatever scrub that you have, a gentle scrub, like smaller granules with turmeric in it. And even if you don't have turmeric, if you add a dash of turmeric to it, you will definitely see a huge difference in your face. So that's a big one for me. And then vitamins, internal. Mm-hmm. There's this drink called Tot that I take, that I drink at night before I go to bed. And then I wake up, it tastes yummy, and I wake up looking yummy.
That sounds good.
Sleep helps too, but since I'm not good at that, I have to compensate.
And my last question is, I feel like, you know, on the beauty front, every generation seems to inherit more pressure to kind of look and present themselves in a certain way. What's your advice for anyone who like just struggles to feel beautiful or empowered and to just kind of be their true authentic selves?
I think, first of all, I believe that every one of us was created with intention and with purpose, you know, and that everyone is beautiful. Like, we have to remember that most of us see the world here, at least in America. Most of us see the world, which includes us. We view ourselves through the lens of sort of like a white male straight patriarchy, you know what I mean? And so I realized, I mean, even when it came to like, I was having a conversation about my faith the other day, you know what I mean? And having to unlearn things that are viewed through this lens, you know? So understand, that's a super duper limiting lens. So when you realize like, oh, I don't think I'm pretty because this tiny little one lens over here that I'm viewing myself through says that I'm not, you know what I mean? So, and then to also remember, you are only, there's one Aaron, and there has never been another Aaron. There will never be another Aaron. There's only one Cassandra, I'll use my government name. And there has never been another, and there will never be another. And when you think about that, you're like, damn, I'm a commodity. Like, when I am gone, that's it. So clearly your contribution matters. Clearly you are beautiful and designed with intention. And so to change the idea that beauty is even physical, to be honest with you, the fact that we could look at another human being, one of a kind, and say that's not beautiful is so crazy to me. So I think that, remember, the lens is super duper small and super duper not true. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's like you are beautiful, and there's only one you. You are the most valuable commodity. So, yeah.
I love it. That's actually all I have for you. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to you.
Yeah, you too.
Take care.
A huge thank you to our guest today, Andra Day, and Who What Wear senior beauty editor, Erin Johns. Make sure to subscribe to our show wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss an episode. And while you're there, I'd also be so grateful if you'd rate and review us. If you have a guest suggestion or any other feedback, drop us a line at podcast@whowhatwhere.com, or you can find us on social at whowhatwhere. See you next Wednesday on Who What Where with Hillary Kerr. This episode was produced by Olivia Capoletti and Aaron Johns. Digital audio editing is by Treehouse Recording in Los Angeles, California. Our music is by Jonathan Leahy.